Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
All right, we're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, a theater arts and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company here in St. Paul, Minnesota. I am in the studio just a block away from History Theater, and we are speaking with actor Elena Glass tonight about a show that History Theater is doing. Maybe you're listening to this on Frogtown Radio, 94.1 FM, or maybe you're listening to it online, wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe it's Spotify. We're glad we're able to do this. Elena, welcome to Mouthing Off. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm doing good.
Great. That's good. And thanks for taking time. I know you have a show. I mean, this show is opening any day now. It's already open, isn't it? I see November 20th.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I got my dates wrong. So yeah, you've been open for a while. So we're going to talk about Rollicking, a winter carnival musical. And Elena is in the cast of this show. The details and tickets are at historytheater.com. One more time, historytheater.com. And that's R-E. And if you're in St. Paul or the Twin Cities and you've never been to History Theater, you owe it to yourself to get over there. It's one of the great regional theaters in the country doing fabulous work consistently and employing actors like Elena. Elena, why don't you tell us about Rollicking, a winter carnival musical, and maybe we'll talk about that for the first 20 or 30 minutes, and then we'll get to know you. I want to get to know how you ended up doing musical theater here in Minnesota. But first, pitch the show. Tell people about what this is.
That sounds great. Okay, so Rollicking is a new musical. It is a Minnesota-based playwright and a Minnesota-based lyricist, Rachel Teagle and Keith Hovis. So one thing we love about the History Theater is that they're always doing completely new works, and not only employing Minnesota actors, but employing Minnesota playwrights, dramaturgs, lyricists, composers, to create new and exciting shows, all about Minnesota, the place that we love so much. So Rollicking is a completely original musical about the Winter Carnival. The Winter Carnival that some of you may know is located in St. Paul, and it has been around since the 1800s. I believe 1886 was the first Winter Carnival. Rachel, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I got that date wrong.
1885.
Okay.
Well, wait, no, I take it back. I'm on the Wikipedia, and if people who know me know I love to read the Wikipedia, you are correct. The St. Paul Winter Carnival was created in 1886. Go on.
Yes, got it. So it has been around for quite a long time. And there's a rich, rich history that comes with it being around that long. So the main protagonist of our play, his name is Clarence Wigington, also known as Cap Wigington. And he is a Black American who was in World War I. And he actually became an architect and he designed some of St. Paul's most prominent buildings. He designed an airport. And he was essentially commissioned to design some of the ice palaces at the Winter Carnival. And so it is based around him and his relationship with his amazing wife named Viola. And so the play is based upon them and their love story, and kind of it's an interesting take on a relationship that's kind of under strife, but there's a lot of love there, and a little bit about the Black experience as well. Back in the 1930s is when our story is set, the 1930s. And then it gets a little more fantastical. Cap gets kind of whisked away to a magical realm called the Winter Carnival Realm. And within that realm, there's lots of characters that people, if you are a fan of the Winter Carnival, will recognize. There's gnomes. There is Klondike Kate, who is the Mistress of Merriment. There's the Vulcans, who are kind of like the villains of the carnival, and they come out every year. There's snow queens, snow princesses. So it's really, I kind of liken it to kind of like a Narnia. So he and his wife from present day travel to this magical realm, where all of the characters from the Winter Carnival congregate. And then the story kind of goes from there. And it's just a lush and rich and funny and original and heartwarming and poignant story. And we've been having such a good time. And the costumes, sets, all of it is incredible. And the actors are just, we're singing and dancing our hearts out. And it's
stay warm.
Oh, of course, we have to. Although it's really funny because we all have kind of insanely amazing costumes. And so under the lights, we're all talking about how cold we are. And we always joke that we're just kind of sweating in our suits because it's just so hot on stage. But anyway, so that's kind of my not so short elevator pitch about Rollicking, a Winter Carnival musical.
Well, that's all right. It can be like a broken escalator pitch. Let's call it that.
There we go.
Listen, we've got a full hour here, so I want to hear more
there
about it.
There we go.
Yeah. And it's running from, you opened, or there were previews.
We opened in November. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we closed on December 21st. So you've got 2 more weeks to come see us, and we're doing 6 shows a week. So that is,
How have the houses been? Have people been responding well to it?
Yes. You know, I think the special thing about the show is that I would say it's correct for kids if they're, the only thing is that it runs about 2.5 hours. So if you have really, really, really littles, you know, maybe they won't be able to sit through the whole thing. But I would say anywhere from 6 and above, my 7-year-old, my cousin's 7-year-old daughter came and she just adored it. And she was with us the whole time. And so it's a show that is great for the whole family. So it's been really great to see some, you know, children's reactions, some, you know, seniors' reactions. And we have a myriad of audience members and they've all been really responsive. It's an interesting time for theater, as you probably know. So some of our like Friday and Saturday nights are actually not being sold as much as our matinees are. Our matinees are kind of packed, but it's the evening shows that are a little less sold out, which
yeah,
I don't
you're
know
competing.
If that's a trend. Mm. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the demographics, the average age, you know, might be more matinee prone. Plus people with children might be bringing, I mean, you know, my wife and I just went and saw White Christmas over at the Heights, which is so fun.
Oh.
They do this annual screening of that where I think they screen it like a dozen times. One, we could only get tickets to the matinee, and two, we've got young children at home. So that's when we're able to go. Yeah.
Yep, I mean, that totally makes sense.
And you're competing with football and other stuff, you know, on Friday nights and Saturday this time of year. But hopefully we can put some butts in seats. You'll get the mouthing off bump here now.
Yes.
Were you involved in the origination of this? I mean, I know typically anyway, a musical doesn't just go from the script immediately to a full production. Can you tell us anything about the developmental history of this production? And were you involved, you know, were you at the table for the first reading or did they bring you in for the production, you know, alone?
Yeah. So History Theater has this amazing thing called Rough Cuts, where it's a performance of pieces that are in process, pieces that they're most likely going to bring to the theater, but they're still kind of being written. They might be in the middle stages of it, and it's cool because it's about a week of rehearsal, and then you know, the audience, they sometimes take feedback from the audience, which is so important, especially in those middle stages. So I wasn't involved in any of the rough cuts. I know they had a few, but luckily after we were cast, about a month before we started rehearsals, we did have a reading of the show where all of the cast was, and we got to give feedback to Rachel and Keith and Lara, who's our amazing director, Lara Loeffler. And that was really great, just to kind of get our heads around the story. And something interesting about new work that some people may not know is that we have tons of changes literally up until opening night. Like, as mm-hmm. we are in the rehearsal room, it is still a living and breathing piece. And so lots of changes like continued to be made throughout the rehearsal process, which is so exciting as an actor. It's so different than if you're doing like a My Fair Lady, right? You're not going to make any sort of word or lyric changes to a script like that. So it really allows us actors to really have a say, and be able to kind of create some of these characters, from scratch. And then it gives the writer and lyricist grounds to, if they see something in the rehearsal room that an actor played with, they might eventually write it into the script, it's kind of that exciting time. So I wasn't a part of the rough cuts that happened. I think they worked on it for about 2 years before it came to the stage, but I was able to do a reading before we got into rehearsals. So that was really great.
Mm. All right. When do we know when is the Winter Carnival? When does that start, the actual thing?
It is in
I
January.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I should know that
okay.
too. But it's, yeah. Let me see. I'm looking
at
it. Yep, it's January 22nd to February 1st, 2026. So
okay,
it's only
right.
for 10 days. That's kind of mm-hmm. an interesting thing that people don't know about the carnival. It is only 10 magical days.
Do you mind if I read a little bit of the history of it, Elena?
No,
I love this
right
stuff.
Ahead.
I'm a history nerd. And the if you go to the St. Paul Winter Carnival Wikipedia page, the first header is history. So in 1885, a New York Boo reporter wrote that St. Paul was another Siberia, unfit for human habitation in winter. That's rich for a New Yorker to write that. Offended by this attack on their city, the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce decided to prove not only that St. Paul was habitable, but that its citizens were very much alive during winter, their most dominant season. A winter carnival had been held over the border in Montreal with an ice castle in 1885. With a model to draw upon, the St. Paul Winter Carnival was created in 1886, which you got correct. It was followed by carnivals held in 87, 88, and 96. It was held again in 1916 and 1917. Then there was another lapse until 1937 when they continued through 1942. Then there was World War II. And then the carnival resumed in 1946. And it is an annual event. And it has been since then. In 1886, King Boreas the First, and I want to hear about King Boreas. I think it's a character in your musical, was crowned.
Oh, yes.
And the first winter carnival commenced. This festival also featured an ice palace, an elaborate creation made from the ice of Minnesota lakes, which has evolved into an intentionally recognized icon for the St. Paul Festival. All right, very, very good, very fun. Okay, what? Who is King Boreas? What is this? Is it like the prom king? For the
yeah, well,
the winter?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You were talking about Siberia and what some of the New York reporters had said and everything, and some of those facts are literally in our show, so you will get to learn a lot about more about the Winter Carnival if you come. So King Boreas, yes, it's essentially. It is somebody from society that is chosen for his civic engagement, right? His civic pride, someone, probably a prominent member of the community. And so he's sort of like the king of the carnival, as it were. And then there is a queen, Queen Aurora is her name. So similar to prom king and prom queen, that is the roles that they can hold, the roles that they play. And then every year, the villain, as I was saying before, his name is Vulcanus Rex. He hates cold weather, and he is just so upset that there's this ice palace, and he wants to come in and storm it. And then he has a crew called the Vulcans. So Vulcans, people that are following, Vulcanus Rex, and then they make a show every year of coming in on the last day to storm the Winter Carnival. And every year we act like it's a surprise, right? But
sure.
No, they are sort of a a tradition of the carnival as well. So that's always a ton of fun. And then, like I mentioned, Klondike Kate, who's such an interesting character. She is someone who kind of just, I don't know the exact year, but she kind of just started showing up. Like it was this woman who was just like, I'm here and this is my name, Klondike Kate. And she just kind of kept showing up. And so much so that I guess they were just kind of like, okay, we'll just have a Klondike Kate every year then. We'll just have somebody inhabit this role, which I think is so iconic that somebody was just like, I'm here and I'm continuing to show up. So those are kind of the... Those are kind of some of the main characters.
Right, right. Well, and I'm going to read a little more here, and then I want to ask you about some of the musical numbers. So, and I'm a bad St. Paulite. I can't say I've ever been to the Winter Carnival. I actually do hate the cold. Maybe I am a Vulcan.
It's okay.
I'm
going
to try
either.
To go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to take my children.
We have to as a cast now because, a lot of us in the cast were like, we've never... Because
and it's right downtown, right? It's held over by the
Landmark Center,
The Landmark Center, the old courthouse, and then the great St. Paul Hotel. I'm down here. I mean, I'm literally blocks away, so I have no excuse.
Yes.
So currently, the Winter Carnival runs the following events as part of the celebration: Royal Coronation, Grand Day Parade, Jigsaw Puzzle Competition, the largest in the nation, Hot Dish Competition, Family Day, Frozen Family Fun Night, Snow Sculpting, Ice Sculpture Carving, Klondike Kate Cabarets, with the C on cabarets there, Historic Art Exhibit, Torchlight Parade, Winter Carnival Music Series, Ice Bars, so I suppose you could probably warm up that way, Fire and Ice Run.
Exactly.
Ooh, no. 5K Distance and more. Ooh, hard pass. And then Beard Growing Competition. Very Minnesotan. All of this.
So Minnesotan.
I love the hot dish competition. That is very cool. That sounds delicious. I'm sure that gets very, very serious.
We've had some carnival lights come to like people that are huge fans, and it's sort of very Renfest vibes, you know. It's people that are very serious about it, and it's something that they're very and they are delighted by all of the references. And I will say, though, that even if you've never come to the carnival, there are plenty of Minnesotan references that you will appreciate. I will spoil one line. There's one line in it that a character says, "What's next, a blizzard on Halloween?" And as we all know, as Minnesotans, you know, the great blizzard of 1991. Or was it 92? That was very young at the time. But yes, anyway, so there's lots of like straight up just Minnesota references. It's a very, very Minnesota show, which is what we love.
Fun. And and we don't want to take away from the carnival. You should definitely go to the carnival. But it sounds like this would be a way to get a taste of the carnival while not being in below freezing temperature.
It'll be nice and warm. Yeah. It'll be nice and warm and snug in
nice
your seats.
Nice and warm, right. And you could probably get some, you want to go to the hot dish, competition. It says Great Storm of 1991.
91. I need to just trust myself. The first guess is always right.
When you're on a podcast, it's not edited. You want to sort of correct yourself. I've made some egregious mistakes on other podcasts I do, and we always try to correct ourselves. But the 1991 Perfect Storm, also known as the No Name Storm and the Halloween Gale Storm, fascinating.
Yep, it was intense.
This Halloween was a little slushy and gross.
Yeah,
but we had some great. Trick-or-treating in our little neighborhood. Did you have any trick-or-treaters? How was it for you?
I'm in an apartment, so not quite but the neighborhood around me, it's a nice neighborhood. I'm based in Roseville.
I love Roseville.
I love it. I was born and raised here. It's the greatest suburb ever. So
correct. Yes, it is. My first daughter was born in Roseville. We did a home birth, and I will probably end up back in Roseville at some point. Although I got a soft spot for St. Paul. I'll always defend St. Paul. As a history lover and somebody who appreciates kind of. I mean, it's America, so, when we say history, 100 years old is ancient, but, we got some 150-year-old history here in beautiful St. Paul. Why don't you tell me, Elena, about some of the musical numbers in this show?
Yeah.
And where do you figure, I suppose, in these musical numbers? I'm sure people would like a taste of that.
Yes, so very cool that there are 15 songs in this show. I just think that that's such an incredible feat for someone to just, you know, perfect and work on 15 original songs from their brain. I think Keith is incredible. And so it's a really you're going to get something of everything in the show. I would say that it's very, I'm trying to remember what it said on the audition notice. It was like Disney meets musical theater meets contemporary. It's kind of like a contemporary musical theater with elements of like Disney and whimsy. And obviously it's a Christmas musical, so there's lots of wholesome sounds. But we have a lot of triple threats in the cast, and there's a really cool jazz number that the Vulcans do. It's called Let's Make It Hot. Wow. And so it's very kind of sizzling in that way. There's a beautiful, beautiful love song that the two main characters sing that's called Fire and Ice. And then a lot of our, some of the gnomes, they have a really funny and quirky kind of like chipmunksy kind of song to introduce the Hylex gnomes that are always in the parade. And so you get a lot of different, it's a musically really, really dense show. I think all of us are working our ranges. I know for me personally, I am like, sometimes I'm alto too, which is the bottom. They've thrown in a couple of high C's for me in the show. So sometimes it's high legit soprano sound. And then I do, another spoiler, Keith was very kind to write in a pop theme for me in the middle of a song. So then I'm kind of scrawling my face off. So it's a very, we're up and down and we're all around. And I always find, you know, I know I'm biased, but I always find these melodies just getting stuck in my head and just like, you know, going to sleep and like having the one like line continue to be around and around in my head. So I would say that you're going to get just like a veritable palette of like lots of different styles, some great singers singing huge ranges. And then we have some great dancers in our cast too. So of course you're going to see some awesome dancing and double turns and all of that fun stuff.
And it's a very large cast as well. I mean,
it could be done with an even larger cast. There's only 9 of us.
Oh, really?
Which it feels like such a bigger cast because we're playing lots of different characters. I myself play 3 different characters, and a lot of our ensemble does as well. So it definitely could be done with a larger cast, but I like that the 9 of us, you know, have so many different characters that keeps it nice and fresh and fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I maybe was counting maybe understudies as well.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah,
we have an amazing lineup of understudies, and we are covered every reason imaginable.
Especially.
We actually had 3 understudies on this past weekend. So you never know.
I was going to say, you never know. People get sick. It's this time of year. Yeah. And then it looks like you've got 4 musicians as well. And I imagine they're all out
they're
there.
Incredible.
They'd probably have to be able to play all these different genres and originate a musical. Very, very fun. Very cool.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at the Winter Carnival website now. It is an elaborate website, wintercarnival.com, just like it sounds. And, it has the look of like a kind of more down home kind of Burning Man. it's a little more, it's like a hot dish Burning Man in the snow, you know, but maybe a little more civic oriented, you know. They don't always do a palace, do they? Do you know, are they doing a palace this year, an ice palace?
I don't know. I wish I did, but I don't know the answer to that.
That's okay. That's off your beat a little bit. But That's very fun. I'm gonna have to force my family into the cold one of these nights.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and maybe we'll all see you there. I know our cast.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I certainly want to see you at the at History Theater. So once again, we are talking to Elena Glass on Mouthing Off here. You can find us at badmouthtc.com. We're Bad Mouth Theater Company. I'm Kevin Kautzman. Elena is in the currently running show, Rollicking, a Winter Carnival musical at History Theater. You can find tickets at historytheaterre.com. It's running until December 21st. I'm going to read the copy off the website to sort of reinforce what it's about. And then, Elena, maybe we'll pivot and chat a bit about you, your background, how you ended up here. How did it start for you to end up in theater? So, a gust of icy wind changes everything. Follow St. Paul's own Clarence Cap Wigington and his wife Viola as their winter carnival ice palace design plunges them into the magical realm of King Boreas. They'll encounter iconic Minnesota figures from bygone poets to racing legends, all woven into a vibrant tapestry of the carnival's myth and history. Discover the strange, wonderful heart of a tradition built on resilience, imagination, and the enduring spirit of our snowy state. And getting one over on those New Yorkers. The winter here is not that bad. Go on.
I lived in New York for 6 years. I went to college there and then I was there for 2 years after. I still to this day think that those winters are harder just because you don't have your car. So if you're going to the subway, and if you're someone like me that takes the subway, it is just terrible. It was just so awful. And I feel like here we get a little bit more bitter cold, but we know so much how to handle it. You know, we're all in our cars and then we go into the buildings and we have these skyways, you know, like we know how to handle it more. So I agree.
There's no bad weather. There's only bad clothing, as the saying goes, and there's a charm to it. If you're a writer, if you're a creative person, you're a playwright, even let's say an actor, it's a great time to do work. Yes. It's also a great time to pump the brakes and relax.
Yes. Hibernate
a little bit. Exactly. Watch some movie. Watch The Shining again. Right. Get into the holiday spirit. Watch Eyes Wide Shut. My favorite Christmas movie. I'm joking a bit, but it's a different vibes. But no, really. I mean, and I've been in New York. You know, I lived in New York too for 6-7 years. I want to talk about your background and everything. But they use any excuse just to stop everything there too. Like a little bit of snow and it all just stops.
Oh my gosh! Absolutely.
You know, they act like they're so tough, but I suppose in certain ways they are. But I mean, you need an all-wheel drive car if you can have one. You need good tires. You got to have a plan. You got to have your space heaters. Ideally, you have a friend who has a hot tub. You have a hot tub in your building. You got to know where your hot tub is. Know where your sauna is. Right.
In the winter coat. Invest in a good winter coat. You know.
That's exactly right. I took my wife to the Axe game against Wisconsin, and we're both alums. I'm a season ticket holder. Go Gophers. Oh. She had never been to a football game before. We went. We stood in the cold. My only mistake, Elena, I only wore one pair of heavy-duty socks. I should have worn two. That's all right.
That'll
listen, I've got a memory now of the Gophers keeping the Axe and being a little bit cold. Point is, there's really only an extra 3 or 4 weeks of winter on either side. And if you, you know, and if you can handle that, then you get all the upside of, affordable rents, affordable housing. There's a lot of upside to the Twin Cities. All right. In any case, I'm making my pitch to be this year's King Boreas. I don't know why. I don't know why my phone isn't ringing. Of course, nobody's phone rings anymore. I'm a millennial. It just goes right to voicemail.
I don't know why my phone isn't vibrating.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Oh gosh, this is a complete aside. I got a new phone at one point and I got it at T-Mobile and all the calls were immediately going to voicemail for like 6 weeks and I didn't realize it. It caused some serious problems.
Oh,
I went back
my
to
gosh.
The store. I went back to the store and they're like, oh, there's this setting inside of me. I'm like, why would you default to that setting? What have you done to me? I don't even want to get into it. It was a nightmare. In any case, just make sure your phone is vibrating, people.
That is a great. Yeah, that sounds like my worst nightmare. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God.
That
I mean,
did
it was
not
just
work out.
Oh, it's just horrendous. In any case, Elena, you know, you mentioned New York. You're from Roseville. Did you go to Roseville High? Were you a Raider?
Yes, I sure did. Yes,
all right.
I attended Roseville High School. Like I said, born and raised in Roseville. Well, I guess I was born in St. Paul, but then we moved to Roseville when I was very young. And loved going to Roseville. There's another Roseville alum in Rollicking, actually. Roland Hawkins also went to Roseville. So we also bond about that. And then, yes, I went to I went to NYU for college. So I was there for 4 years doing that. And then I stayed in New York a couple years after that, doing the whole New York thing. And then I moved back to the Twin Cities back in 2016. And so it's coming up on my 10-year anniversary. Okay. So I've been back for quite a while. Oh,
we,
yeah.
Well, we must have had some overlap because I moved there from grad school in 2013. So there's a little overlap.
Oh.
There was a nice little golden age in New York City from right when Sandy ended to when the plague started. And my poor wife and I, we had to flee the plague. So we didn't get out scot-free. But the people who kind of like came in after Sandy and got out before COVID, there was a little golden age there in New York City. I can't speak to how it is now, but there's no city like it. I mean, I would make fun of it a little bit, but I mean, there really is nothing like it.
I loved it so much. And I loved especially going to college there because it just, man, there were so many things. You know, I grew up with, even going to Roseville, my circle was white and Lutheran. You know, it was like there were so many homogenous things that going to New York and, you know, right away at NYU, I had three roommates who I loved. One is a dual citizen from England and America. One is Nigerian. One is half Guyanese and half Puerto Rican. And so immediately it's just like, you know, okay, great. I'm being exposed to different cultures and backgrounds and all of this stuff. And then, you know, it helps you grow up like really, really quickly, like taking the subway right away and then just finding your way through, you know, a bustling city, especially not having like a quote unquote quad, not having a quote unquote campus. There were definitely like, you know, positives and negatives to that, but I just loved it. I'm a very independent person and I always have been. And so it was just sort of, you know, a great way to kind of grow up. And I just loved it. And of course the theater scene and immersing myself, I majored in musical theater and the theater scene was just bar none. I just got to see so many incredible productions at a fraction of the price with my student ID and everything. And yes, it's the best. I try to go back every year because I just, the energy of the city is just, there's nothing like it. And just the culture, the experiences, the food, all of the coffee, all of it. I love it.
Sure,
so
and the late nights too. We have a young family now, so it's a little, we've mellowed out a bit. Obviously you have to, but there's nothing like a night in New York City with your friends that
starts at. I worked at a restaurant for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
I definitely lived I did a lot of different things. I nannied and then I was lucky enough to do a couple shows and stuff. I really was truly doing the working actress kind of thing. And then, I was at a restaurant for 2 years and my first shift was the 3 a.m. shift when I got hired. And that was something that I'm okay to not go back to ever again, but it was definitely quite a time. It was quite a
you
time.
Paid
in my
your,
life,
you
sure.
paid your dues. Where
paid
in town
my dues.
Was, you don't have to tell me the name of the restaurant, but where in town was the restaurant? Was it downtown?
Yeah.
Was it
I'll midtown? Tell you the name. I owe a lot to that place. The name is the Penrose and it's on the Upper East Side. It's 82nd and, 82nd and 3rd, I believe. So it's kind of a high, it's like a ship, like gastropub. So they have a great craft cocktail program and great food at the same time. And it's a lot of singles meet there. It's named as one of the best places to like find a date and all that stuff. So anyway.
Cool.
But
I lived for a year at 96 in Lexington. So I know that area pretty well.
Oh,
Upper East Side is pretty cool. Lots and lots of fun. What was it like? And then I want to go back to your origins. I want to get the the glass lore through a glass darkly, as it were.
Love it.
But I had to do it. So what
does.
Was it like? What was it like attending my first girlfriend in New York had attended NYU and she was a playwright, but I never really like picked her brain about what it was like, you know, I never interviewed her. So I want to ask you, what was that like as a Minnesotan? That is a big transition to come from Roseville, you know, to NYU. There's really no campus quite like NYU anywhere else in the country. What was that experience like?
Definitely, you know, growing pains, but also in the best way. I actually wrote a one-woman show this year and I performed it at three different theaters and I have a whole section in the middle where I talk about just kind of growing up in New York. So I would say You know, a couple things. I mean, yes, number one, just the culture shock. I mean, I just love like being on the subway and hearing people speak in different languages. And again, like my roommates are just one example, but people are coming from all different walks of life and having different experiences. And so just like the melting pot, I know it's kind of cheesy, but it's just like the melting pot of different religions, backgrounds, ethnicities, all of the above, and NYU cultivates is just really, really, really great. And then, you know, yeah, like just the subway and figuring out your own way, and you know, the not having a car. I mean, you're really truly thrust in the middle. But for someone, it's definitely not for everyone. But you know, for artistic souls, kind of like you and I, you know, it's very inspiring. It's very energizing, to have that
Absolutely.
energy. And so, especially as a, you know, a little 19-year-old, I kind of was drinking it up. I was like, oh man, this is incredible. As far as the schooling, you know, I really wanted something that was very, I was like, okay, if I'm going to do theater, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, really try to immerse myself in it, get a degree and everything. And so, yeah, it's intense. And I have, you know, another podcast for another day to talk about just how sometimes those programs are great and sometimes they're harmful, you know, in certain ways about pigeonholing people and saying this is your type. And you know, there's a reason that a lot of eating disorders run rampant in you know,
Theater
these
and dance.
communities. Yeah, theater and dance especially, but also in singing too. I mean, anybody who's on, I mean, film is getting a little better, thank goodness, but like on the stage, you know, there's still just like that sort of body type that's kind of glamorized, especially for women. And so that's a little interesting. But that being said, you know, of course it was just really wonderful and thrilling to go full throttle into, you know, different types of acting, Meisner, Stanislavski, all that kind of stuff. And then for singing, you know, just really going gung ho and like I took, you know, piano, I took music theory, I took aural comprehension and all of these things. And then of course, you know, there's you're getting a bachelor's, so the I was excited to go to NYU because I also minored in psychology and you know, I'm a high achieving student. So my normal classes, quote unquote, like my math class, right? And my child psychology class, they're at the super high level because NYU has some great professors. So I was really not only challenged in, you know, my theater studies, but also in just me like, okay, I have to have these classes to graduate. One of the classes I took was nutrition, and I know that sounds really silly, but like I think about that class all the time. And same with like my child psych class and all of like a lot of other things. So it was very, very intense. We weren't, I mean, we certainly partied the way other college students did, but we weren't as hard partiers because we were always in rehearsal and we were always, you know, trying to be healthy for our recitals and all that kind of stuff. So we were on, I'm not saying we were angels. We certainly would go to restaurants and use our fake IDs and all that stuff.
Yeah, well,
But
there's something you have to train something like an athlete to do musical theater, especially, I think, but just theater even generally. You can't be hungover every day before rehearsal. You can't come in,
So we were pretty good about keeping ourselves in shape and all of that stuff. So yeah,
Now,
so I loved
playwrights, on the other hand, can
it.
abuse their way all through grad school and remember only half of it. Take my word. Yeah, but that's we're a different
Good
breed
to
for
know.
sure. What shows, and then we'll go back in time, Elena, but what shows did you do at NYU?
At NYU, I was grateful to my sort of main show that I did was a production of Sweeney Todd. I was the beggar
Oh,
woman,
cool.
which was really,
Nice.
really my favorite.
Yeah, so
But
cool.
yeah, I loved it. And then we also did some Shakespeare. I was Phoebe in As You Like It, which was really, really cool. And then we did a production of Baby that I was Lizzie in, which is a really interesting show. And then, you know, for my senior recital, I did selections from Parade, which is the Jason Robert Brown show. So I was Lucille in that, which was really, really cool. And then I got to try my hand at directing a few things. I directed Eurydice by Sarah Ruhl,
It's a great play.
which was oh, so good, so great. And then, yeah, those are the things that I think of right now. I'm like, oh my God, that was so long ago.
Yeah, Eurydice's that play where, you know, as play, I mean, the vogue for that type of play passed. Although, of course, that's a classic. But that was one of those plays that we would all talk about and look at the developmental history of it. I think it had something like 11 plus developmental bits and bobs and readings and everything before it was finalized. It's sort of an inspiring thing as a playwright, because you go, okay, you don't have to get it right on draft one, just get draft one down and then see what you can do. What was it like directing that?
It was so exciting. It was very much just about the, you know, I didn't get, it wasn't so much about the, oh, let's get this crazy, amazing set, you know, cause it's student direction kind of thing. Sure. So it was more about the relationships and the acting and the, you know, just telling that beautiful story. And, you know, of course that was pre Hadestown, the gorgeous retelling of Eurydice. So we got to do a lot of things that sometimes we miss in these short rehearsal processes as union actors, of table work and talking about our characters and really going in depth with the relationships. And the relationship with Eurydice and her father is so beautifully portrayed in that show. And the stones, you know, they're so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we embody these inanimate objects, you know? It was really a cool process. And of course I wanted everybody to have a good time and learn something. So that was my kind of main goal there. Because it's educational theater.
There you go. Now there you go. We're dropping into that accent. The Midwest accent and a kind of naive openness is a superpower in New York City to a point. There's a ceiling, yes, but for a minute, you know, you show up with rosy cheeks and you still have a glimmer in your eye. You're not dead inside yet. Just that alone, they're ready.
Not yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Some doors open and, you know, and then eventually you have to, well, in any case.
I would always have resting friendly face. So people would always ask me, even if I had headphones in or I was busy, they'd say, excuse me, do you know where I can find this? Or do you know which direction this is? And I was like, why?
Yes. Look so friendly. I would get that a lot, because I spent a lot of time in London over the years. I still get that an awful lot in London, as I'm a little tall guy, and then I wear like a pop collar. I look like I fit in, you know. And then I open my mouth, and then they just deflate, you know, because obviously I'm not. Oh, that's not the right guy to ask. Although I might know. You never know. Elena. So that was undergraduate work that you did you must have been
undergrad.
You were 19. Yeah,
yep.
Cool. Did I see Texas Tech on your bio too? Did you spend some time in Texas?
Oh, so funnily enough, yeah, well, I'll just do a kind of, I mean, do you want me to just kind of take you like since school and kind of what I've done here in the city
well,
and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, why don't we, let's go back first and then we'll go forward to what you've done. Okay. So what was the first musical that Elena Glass was in?
Oh my gosh. Well, it was Oliver over at Hill Murray. I believe it was Pioneer Theater at the time. And I was seven or eight. Okay. So I was one of the little orphans. And my solo was, it was in Food, Glorious Food. And it was called Jelly and Custard. And I still remember it to this day. It's my first show I was in. I loved it. It was so much fun. And I'd had the bug, of course, before then, but that was the first show I got to be in. And then my parents luckily really supported it when I was a kid. And so I actually did six productions at the History Theater as a kid. Two productions of Orphan Train, two productions of To Kill a Mockingbird, Scout, which was such an incredible experience. And then two productions of A Christmas Schooner as the young girl in that production. Oh. And then I was, you know, I got to be Annie when I was 10. Production that was at the Como Pavilion, which is
that's a big role for 10.
I was honored. I mean, I was, you can probably imagine, I was just the annoying, you know, like musical theater obsessed little girl. It's always just like, this is what I want to do, and blah, blah, blah. That was really cool to get to do that. And then, of course, I got to high school and I got really invested in my high school's extracurriculars and other things. So I didn't do professional theater much in high school. But, I was very lucky to have my parents let me get out of school sometimes to do those shows at the History Theater. It was a huge, huge lesson to learn from professional actors, especially To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, that subject matter is so heavy. And my parents weren't like, no, she can't do that. And they, you know, then said they were like, okay, like, let's have you do this as long as you keep up in school and stuff. And so that was really, really special. So I feel grateful that the History Theater has been such a great, it's been such an important part of my life for a really long time because of that.
Yeah. So would you describe, you were a child actor?
I mean, I don't want to say it like, you know, in an annoying way. But yes, definitely. From a very young age, my parents were like, oh yeah, this is what she wants to do and what she wants to drive in.
Yeah, I don't mean it in a punitive way at all. I think it's great. And it's, you know, and if you have very, very fond memories of it, it sounds like it was a good, cozy experience. I don't think everybody 100%. Has that experience, you know, but it sounds like your parents protected you and History Theater was the right venue.
100%. Yep.
Very, very cool. What a way to, well, you talk about growing up in New York. I mean, growing up pretty fast if you're playing Annie at 10. I mean, you're wrestling with some pretty big, big thoughts and feelings.
Yes, but I loved it. It was fun. I've always been somebody who, again, like a tradition, like I've always had a lot of big feelings and a lot of like, you know, feeling things a little deeper than the kids around me and being kind of sensitive and that kind of stuff. So it was just a perfect outlet to express all of that, obviously.
Very, very good. And an extrovert, would you say?
Oh, yes. Yes. I definitely, since COVID, have leaned into my ambivert self where I enjoy both. I'm an introverted extrovert or an extroverted introvert, whatever they say. So I enjoy my alone time, especially I've lived alone for 5 years and gosh, that is just, it's so,
what a treat.
I know it's, yes, it really is. But yes, definitely an extrovert for sure, I would say.
Yeah. Well, we've got maybe another 6-7 minutes, Elena. I do want to hear about what you've been doing since you came back from NYU. One more time to give the plugs. We're talking to Elena Glass. She is an actor in Rollicking, a Winter Carnival musical running at History Theater, historytheaterre.com here in downtown St. Paul through December 21st, 2025. Get tickets. If you're listening to this after the 21st, go to the Winter Carnival, wintercarnival.com, and also just support History Theater, whatever they got going on. Yeah. You know, it's going to be, it's always a crapshoot going to the theater, but I've really never regretted going to History Theater, even when it's not something for me. Like, I'm not the target audience for Glenn Sheen, a musical, but it's awesome. It's awesome.
Yes.
I'm a 43-year-old guy, like, who is maybe not, I'm not the biggest, the wildest fan of musicals as a rule. Glenn Sheen is awesome. And I'm sure this is awesome too. They just do a very, very solid job at History Theater, historytheater.com. So Elena, you get back from NYU, from Manhattan in 2016. You come back to Minnesota and tell us a little bit about what you've been doing since then. And you know, how many times have you been at History Theater? It sounds like that's a regular home for you.
Yeah. It really is. Yes. So I came back in 2016 and then I was lucky enough to start working at some theaters around town. So I was in a bunch of shows at Ordway. I was in a show at Old Log Theater, Yellow Tree Theater, Theater Elysian, Nautilus Music Theater, which is one of my favorite places. And then the History Theater specifically, I was Judy Garland when they did Beyond the Rainbow in 2019, which is one of the, that was one of my favorite theatrical experiences of my life. I've loved Judy Garland since I was a tyke. So, and got to go through her whole history of her husbands and getting married to Vincent Minnelli, having Liza, and then her drug and alcohol abuse and her, all of her, you know, trauma that she endured that wasn't her fault when she was a kid. So anyway, and then also at the History Theater, I was in Christmas of Swing as Patty Andrews of the three Andrews sisters. So that was a very special production as well. And then I've been on an understudy streak with them. So I've understudied for Glenn Sheen, for Wonelli this year, and Runestone as well, I understudied for. In addition to being a performer, bringing it around to Texas Tech, I became a certified intimacy coordinator in 2021. So that is something that I'm very passionate about as well. For those of you that don't know, an intimacy coordinator essentially choreographs any intimate moments on stage, just so that it's another way for the actors to have those moments choreographed like a dance. It's or like fight choreography as well, is how I kind of say it. And then we also lead exercises with the director and the cast, so that the cast feels autonomy in the room, knows that they can say no, knows that they can have a little more control in what their boundaries are in the room. So I did some of that work at Texas Tech. I've also done intimacy for Lyric Arts, the History Theater, Artistry, and some other places around town too. And then the last thing I did this year, like I mentioned earlier, is I jumped into the realm of playwriting myself, and I wrote, like I said, my one-woman show. It's called Loudly, Clearly, Beautifully. We did it at three venues this year, and we're going to do it a couple more places next year. We're just kind of finalizing some dates. But so that is a show that I'm very proud of, and it had a lot of great critical reception, which I was really surprised and pleased by. But it is about my relationship with my father, who had multiple sclerosis for 16 years, and then he passed away in 2020. And even though it's a very, I always pitch that and people go, oh, heavy subject matter. I would say the majority of the show is very funny and very light and very, it's an exploration of how he shaped me as a human, the lessons I learned from him, obviously our relationship, and then kind of how I came into power after going through grief. Since he died in COVID, it was a very specific experience. And so I use music and obviously acting and some storytelling elements, and it's about an 80-minute show. And I never thought that I always liked writing, and I'm a copywriter by day. And
oh, is that right?
Yep. And I have some grant writing experience too. Yes. Yeah, where do you work? Can I ask?
Well, I work for a crypto tax startup. So I write about crypto taxes. If you want to know anything about crypto taxes in the Netherlands, I'm your guy. What about you?
Wow. How did you know? I did.
Yeah, sure.
right now I work for a company called Brandography, which is a digital marketing company, and it's based in Minneapolis.
Cool. Yeah, there's so much of that industry here. People don't know. Yeah. You can make a living as a writer.
You certainly can. Yes. And so even though I've always been interested in it, I always was like, oh, I never, not something I can see myself writing a show. And it's very different when it's your own show. It's very different than writing a play for other people. But now I have the bug. So maybe I'll need to pick your ear or pick your brain, not pick your ear. Sorry.
You can pick my ear too. You can pick my ear too, Elena. I mean, I'm always happy to give advice about playwriting. I mean, I have an MFA in playwriting, and if you've already tried it, you know, you should maybe write some 10-minute plays, get in at History Theater, join their opportunity board and go from there. And plus, as an actor writing plays, I mean, the first thing I will tell aspiring playwrights, well, I'll ask them, I go, have you ever acted? No. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you need to take an acting class. You have to take an acting class. You don't write 100%. An orchestra without knowing how to play an instrument. So you're writing for actors first. So you bring that experience. And that sounds great. We got to wind down here, Elena. This has been such a fast hour. I feel like we could talk for another hour.
Agreed.
If I ever cover, so I do another podcast called Art of Darkness at artofdarkpod.com, where we do biographical profiles of dead artists. We already have our season set up for 2026. But if I ever cover Judy Garland, I'm going to put in the back of my brain that we'll have you on to talk, because you'd have a unique insight into her. I know, right?
I would love that so much. I just adore her.
Fascinating.
And I feel like I know her pretty well.
Minnesotan, a great Minnesotan. Elena, where can people find you, and then give the pitch for Rollicking once more, and then we'll wind down for the night.
Yes. Well, you can find me at Rollicking through December 21st at the History Theater. It's Rollicking, a Winter Carnival musical. And then, next year I have a few different projects in the works, but you can find all of that information on my website, elenaglass.com. I'm around. So,
Elena, so much fun. And I wish you all the broken legs over at the musical. And maybe I will see you there. Maybe I'll see you over some hot dish here by the Landmark Center.
I hope so. It was so great to talk to you. Thank you for having
me. Likewise. Thank you so much. And thanks so much for your time. All right. You've been listening to Mouthing Off on 94.1 Frogtown Radio FM here in St. Paul, Minnesota, or maybe online. Have a good evening. Take care. Stay warm. Stay warm out
there. Thank you.
Don't let the New Yorkers talk any smack. Yeah. Here we go. Good night.